Welcome to Radio Labyrinth Presents. We haven't had an interview show in a couple of weeks, so we have a great guest tonight who has been on Radio Labyrinth in the past, I believe, to promote something called Vape the Musical. But our guest this week is Brian Troxell. He's a voice actor and an actor. He's the owner, producer, director, actor at Sketchworks Comedy, Atlanta's longest sketch comedy company. And he's also the anchor of their weekly news break program, which has been running longer than COVID, and streams on MobFi TV and Sketchworks social media pages. He's performed over 175 audiobooks across every genre you can imagine, except for porn. I don't know why. I would, you know, the porn books have to be really good. You just have to grunt. And he narrated Audible's Daily Wall Street Journal morning read under the name Alexander Quincy from 2015 until it was unceremoniously canceled at the end of November 2021. Brian is represented by AMT and can be seen in Hawkeye on Disney Plus and the upcoming fourth season of Cobra Kai, which I believe now is on Netflix, not YouTube TV. If I'm wrong, tell me. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. It's been a while.
Yeah, it has been a while. When did we have you on for Vape?
I think I want to say 2019. So 2 years ago is right when all the lawsuit shenanigans started going down. The cease and desist and all that stuff.
How'd that play out? I hope you won.
It is not played out because COVID shut down all court systems forever. We're at the point now where all the motions have been filed and it just went back and forth. So it's now we're just waiting on the judge to make a decision. And that could be, you know, it could be tomorrow morning. It could be 3 months from now. So
you think a judge would just look at that and go, this is stupid.
You would think that. That's what we've been thinking for the last 2 years.
In the meantime, you've got everything else going on. You managed to survive the real bad part of the pandemic when everything was shut down. So when we say the pandemic, which is still going on,
right?
But now we're living with it, learning how to live with it, and go in and out of places again. So you managed to survive 2020, the year that this all started,
right?
And Sketchworks still going strong.
Still going. I mean, we had two shows that were scheduled to go in April and May of 2020. And we were actually in rehearsal for the first one. And then everything got shut down. So no more live stuff. We had, one of the live shows had to do with like workplace humor. And we revisited that and none of it is funny anymore because the workplace has changed. Right. The other one was a sequel to our all female show Heels called Heels Up. And we were supposed to do that again in August of 2021. And then Delta blew through. So we postponed it again. So now we're probably looking to do that in March, I want to say. We did do a one-night live show at the All the Laughs Comedy Awards back in October. So that was fun. It was outdoors, but was cold as anything you want to say that's cold. But it was a lot of fun just, you know, being able to do it again.
Well, thankfully, it's December, which means it's going to be in the 70s and you can get back out and do it again.
Yeah, we get our fall summer and then an ice storm the day after.
Yes, an ice storm that shuts power down. So realistically, what's it looking like for next year as far as doing live shows and appearances in front of people? Now, I mean, do you do like a certain amount of shows a year and then you have to do a lot of practicing and everything up until that point?
Yeah, the thing with sketch, I mean, it's not like improv where you can get your, you know, your improv group up there and just do a show. We write everything in advance. We usually have, I want to say, like 4 weeks of rehearsal, like a couple times a week. And then we have like tech week. And so it's a lot of buildup. So it's a lot of prep that goes into it. So I think our main theater that we performed out of Village Theater, I think they're still on a 50% capacity. They're on some sort of capacity limit. Mm-hmm. And they require vaccinations and all that. So I guess at this point with Omicron coming out, I don't see that changing. So it's just a case of, okay, let's do a show for 50% capacity.
So we want to talk about Hawkeye. Now, I came to the show late. Everybody started it before me on the show. And everybody loves it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I don't know. I kind of have Marvel fatigue. Plus, I'm obstinate. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to watch it. But anyway, I said, I'm going to put it on. And I watched it. And of course, it was really, really well done. And it's great. And it's action packed. And the story's good. Mm-hmm. And it's enjoyable as all get out. And I noticed you right away.
Thank you,
Brian. And I had seen you were in something, but they had cut scenes, but I didn't put two and two together because I didn't really, I just saw it. I'm like, okay. And I didn't see Hawkeye or whatever. And then when I saw it in Hawkeye, I'm like, yeah, you could have been in it more, but what you were in it, you had a good impact.
No, thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Again, I didn't read all the, they're very secretive. So I've only seen, read the scripts, the sides that we had on the day. But I, what I love about, there are two things I love about Hawkeye, about the show, even if I wasn't in it, is the emphasis on comedy.
Yeah.
It's almost a comedy first and foremost. And the director of my episodes, Reese Thomas, was at Saturday Night Live for over a decade. He was basically Lorne Michaels' number two, directed all the film stuff. And then Bert and Bertie were the other directors for the other three episodes, and they have a big comedy background. All the Atlanta talent that they hired were all sketch. Clayton English is a stand-up and has been forever. Adele Drahos has been an improviser with Whole World. So it's almost like an action comedy, more so than a superhero show. And that's the other thing is like none of the characters on the show, none of the heroes or the villains have any powers.
Right.
They're all regular people. So it's not like, you know, folks are going to come flying in saving the day. I think it's a great character action comedy show.
Yeah, and it pokes fun of itself, and it pokes fun at a little bit at the superhero culture, because you can see the superhero, you know, and Hawkeye's tired of seeing it, all that, and
lots of Atlanta in there too. Especially episode three was huge, Atlanta.
I've not watched episode three yet. I've only seen, that just dropped.
Just came out today. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, but originally, I was in episode one. I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but in episode one, I had one more scene. If you'll recall, when the bad guys broke into the auction room, Gary was supposed to get buried under a pile of rubble, like from my waist down. And so I was supposed to be, you know, screaming for help. And then you see Kate Bishop show up. You see her feet plant down in front of me. And it's like the first epic hero shot of Kate Bishop in the Ronin costume. And then she drags me to safety. We didn't have time to film that. I was there for 3 days in January and for a week in March. We didn't have time to film that in January. So that got cut. I was supposed to be back in episode six, the finale, to do some more stuff. But because that rescue was the setup for all the stuff I was supposed to do in episode six, they fell behind again when I was back in March. And so they're like, well, since we never filmed the setup, we can't take the time to film the payoff. So you will not be in episode six.
Ah, that sucks.
That sucks. But
well, the hard thing was, is that, that Haley Steinfeld had a drop dead date. She had to go film Dickinson. So it's like, literally she had to stop filming Hawkeye on this date. So they couldn't just keep pushing things out. They had to start cutting stuff.
Right.
So that's what happened there.
How was it working with her?
It was great. She was good. She had her own tent on set, which was nice.
Oh yeah.
I guess you have to, you know, since you're a star and all that, but no, she was nice. She was great. Everybody on the show was great. It was an amazing experience.
And where do they shoot your stuff?
I was going to ask that.
The first stuff, the auction stuff was, at Tyler Perry Studios, because the Marvel Studios were full. So they filmed a lot of stuff at Tyler Perry Studios. And then the stuff for episode six, was at a hotel in Midtown, and I don't want to say any more about that because I might give it away. But so I was on studio once, and then on location.
And the LARPing scene from episode two, is that where the LARPing is? Is that, did they go to New York to shoot that, or did they?
I know they filmed in New York last fall. Okay. I don't think the LARP stuff was in New York. I'd have to ask Adele or Clayton. I don't think the LARP stuff was in New York because I don't think they got cast until the last minute. So that might have been here in Georgia somewhere.
There was a lot of snow, but that could have been fake as far as.
I know that the walking scene in episode three with the dog and Hawkeye and Haley, those were shot in Washington Square Park.
Yeah.
So that was New York.
They did do a lot of New York location shooting before they came down here to Atlanta.
There's a bunch of exterior shots that you can tell are definitely New York, but then a bunch of shots that you can see Atlanta if you're familiar with it.
Right.
Yeah. And how they like to turn it into New York.
Yeah.
And they mix Marvel
it together really well.
Yeah. And they do stuff like put blue screens on background windows and things like that, and they'll just project New York in the background.
And the giant lights in downtown Tucker a couple of weeks ago. These, I mean, I don't know if they were lights, but they were giant screens that had a ring of lights around them. They were humongous, and they were right. They had the street shut down. They were shooting something, or what was it? What is it? It's Outlaw with Pierce Brosnan.
So, okay.
Pretty interesting. Just everywhere, all over the city, constantly using us as a set. I love it.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you look back to, I think, Watchmen on HBO, like the main thing happened right there on the square in Decatur. And it's just like, that's.
And you can tell if you're from.
Yeah, it was obvious. Yeah, I know. They didn't disguise it as anything.
No. No, you even saw the guy who always bums change off me when you get off of MARTA. he was there as well.
Now, the upcoming Cobra Kai, anything you can dish on that?
I don't want to dish too much, but I also don't think I signed an NDA, so they're not as cranky as Marvelous. I'm in three episodes of Cobra Kai, and if you'll recall back in season one, there's the board that runs the tournament board. Ralph Macchio's character, Daniel, was one of the board members, but now he's a sensei and running his own karate school. He can't be on the board because he's not an impartial person. So they need to find somebody to replace him. And I play that person who replaces him on the tournament board.
Nice.
Season four.
Do you get to say sweep the leg?
I don't, but I do get to basically call them out for, you know, running tournaments where boys kick the crap out of girls and like, hey, don't you think that's a little weird? So I do get the tournament rules changed for season four. So the big climactic next tournament in season four is a little bit different than the last one in season one.
Was Karate Kid a big movie in your life when you were younger?
What was it? Eight. I was in high school when it came out. It was
four.
So I was in high school when it came out.
Yeah.
I'm ancient. It really wasn't. I saw it. My sister loved that movie. She saw it so many times. So I think I saw it just because she watched it all the time, but it was a good movie, but it was never, you know, it wasn't one of my all time favorite. I didn't hate it, but it doesn't, you know, I wasn't like a super huge, I didn't have like a Cobra Kai, I mean, a Karate Kid lunchbox or anything like that.
That was, it was something that I recorded off HBO. And then it was one of those movies that you watched, not every day, but maybe every other day. That's the kind of childhood I had, especially in the summer. You know, watch that, 16 Candles, Breakfast Club, every other day exclusively. Or Red Dawn, that was another one.
Red Dawn, yeah, that one. Yeah, I would watch History of the World Part One and Blazing Saddles and all those comedies.
Mel Brooks' book came out today. I gotta get that on.
Oh. Yeah, that'd be a good one to pick up.
What's this book about?
All About Me, it's called.
Yeah, I know.
Well, there you go.
Assuming it's about Mel Brooks. Yeah. Well, I asked that because the fact that they brought this show back that had they brought the original people back for this series a couple of years ago. It started out on YouTube, and that was a much loved film. There were what, three sequels? I think I
know. Yes,
Karate Kid 3, and then there was
the next Karate Kid.
Yeah, and then there was the one with
or Jaden Smith.
Yeah, right.
Jaden, the reboot. Yeah,
and that one didn't do so well. But to take that franchise that's so old and so far away and bring it back and have it be relevant and really, really well done is just amazing to me. And you know, it's like there's certain things that they can tap into and mine from that era and bring into the modern era. Very few work, and that's one of them that does.
Yeah, and I think they've done a brilliant job of not. I mean, yeah, there is sort of a nostalgia factor to it because there has to be, but they've also done a really good job, you know, bringing all these characters ahead, what, 35 years, and bringing, giving them all new lives and switching them around. It's not just, you know, the bad kid versus the good kid. You know, Danny LaRusso does some awful things, and
yeah, he's wealthy, you know, privileged, and Zabka's character is poor. And,
right.
You know, just a drunk and a bad dad, but he wants to do well.
Mm-hmm. And I think they've done a great job with the development each year. It's not like they're not telling the same story over and over and over again. They're actually building a whole new world and a whole new storyline out of all these, even though they keep bringing everybody back from the first.
Yeah.
Even the kid who wore the Macon Bacon shirt with two pigs having sex.
Well, I'd have to check the Cobra Kai wiki to see if that came back.
When is that coming back?
I think it drops December 31st. I don't know if it's all the episodes or if they're stretching them out, but I know that at least the first episode drops December 31st.
Netflix is starting to experiment with that weekly release idea. Mm-hmm. I think because a lot of these streaming services are getting more views that way, or at least keeping the buzz going long enough.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. Instead of everybody talking about it for a day and then binge watching, it just carries it out, stretch it.
I like that because it's like when we grew up, it's normal television watching. You had to wait an entire summer to find out that Kristen, spoiler alert, shot JR. You had to wait.
I had an I Shot JR shirt that summer.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
That's cool. I love that show, and I will occasionally watch it if I see it on some place.
A lot of the services, though, they put out like 3 or 4 episodes to appease the millennials who only binge watch stuff.
That's right. No instant gratification for you, millennials. Wait.
Hawkeye, I mean, that's Apple and Disney do a really good job of that. And I love the fact that I didn't get to binge watch The Mandalorian. You know, I had to wait.
And HBO Max does it too.
Yeah, that's right. So they got the sweet spot. And you can take a show that nobody, like a show like Squid Game, where nobody really knew anything about it. You dump that all at once. Everybody talks about it. Now, when it comes back, they could drop that weekly, and people would tune in every week.
Right. You got to get the hook in your cheek first.
Yes. So let me ask you: were you involved with the campaign at all?
I was supposed to be. Because I know you and I were on a table read.
I
think they had me tabbed for, I want to say, an elven knight, like a really depressed, sad, bitter shell of his former self, elven knight.
Yeah.
And I think it's supposed to be in like an episode 8, but I don't think they've gotten there yet.
I think they're still working to raise money to make the episode. So
yeah. No, that would be like not a comedic role for sure. So yeah, no, I was looking. A lot of Sketchworks people are involved in the campaign. So I look forward to hopefully being in it. I'll be in anything. I'll honestly, I'm an actor. I'll be in anything.
You were in that Bigfoot movie that we talked to Zach Lamplove.
Yeah, I was. I was briefly in that. Yeah.
Who'd you play in that?
One of the newscasters, and. Zach didn't have cue cards, so he had to scribble cue, and his handwriting is terrible. He'd hold this thing up, and like me and Crystal, and I think Kimberly Hamilton, Crystal Lowe and Kimberly Hamilton played the news folks, and we were all like, don't squint in the camera. I can't read.
That was a well-done film. I enjoyed it.
Really. Yeah, no, it was. They did a really good job.
The twists and turns toward the end made it even more enjoyable because I had no idea any of that was coming, and threw me for a loop.
No, it's having its life on Showtime now. It's kicking around on Showtime, and it pops up in my feed like all the time now that it's been
pushed onto
Showtime.
Yeah, and everybody, it's a weird comedic community here in Atlanta, but yeah, I've known those guys for a while. And they're good peoples. They do funny stuff.
What else are you working on right now? Anything you can talk about?
I did 2 days on a show that I can't talk about a couple of weeks ago, but it's a long running show that everybody's wanted to be on over the years. And I think that'll be out in the spring. A weird role on that show. Other than that, I had during the summer. Since I booked Cobra Kai, when did I film that? I booked that in February, filmed it in March. And then from there until I booked this last show, I had, and this count may be off, 122 auditions for films and TV shows in a row without booking anything.
Oh,
I had a few of them. No, these were all tapes, but just like, right. I had a few avail checks. But it's like, nope, sorry. Oh, here's what all you need is approval from the director and producer. And I never heard back. 122 in a row.
Man.
Now, if you were an optimist, which I'm not, you would say, but Brian, you got 122 auditions in like 8 months. That's really good. I'm like, yeah, but still sucks banging your head against the wall.
Yeah.
So that was my summer on the film and TV front. And then I lost the Wall Street Journal job this week. It got canceled by Audible, which was kind of annoying. Other than that, audiobooks and sketchworks.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about the audiobook process. You have to be a good character actor to be able to do one that people want to listen to. I've listened to so many, and the ones where people aren't good at, I mean, they might be have great voices and everything, but if you can't be a if you can't read in character and you can't be a storyteller, then right. It just takes me right out of the story.
Yes.
So tell me about that process and what you do.
Well, for fiction, obviously that's the case. And it's one of the things, one of the reasons I love doing audiobooks is I can play anybody that's not based on how I look or my physicality. I can literally play anybody. I can play like, you know, a pregnant runaway 14-year-old girl. And wow, you're putting me on the spot.
Oh, I'm pregnant and I'm running away.
Yeah, see, you can't. You just soften up your voice and young it down a bit. But you don't go full Monty Python.
I love your spam.
But for fiction, it's actually, I do a lot of prep work because you don't know which characters are going to stick around and what they're going to do. So I'll read the entire book ahead of time, and I keep a notebook, and anytime a new character shows up, I write down who they are and any descriptives, what they look like, you know, anything the author throws in there, what they sound like. And then I'll sort of get a feel, and I'll read things out loud as I go along. And then when I'm done, I'll, you know, if there are any important sections, I might go back and rehearse those a bit. Because you don't get a lot of time to rehearse them. You're just there and you're doing it. But yeah, it's like, it is almost ruined reading for me for fun. The last time I sat down to read a story, I just started going, okay, so this guy is, he's like, stop it. Just enjoy the damn story. But yeah. I'll go through and I'll make all sorts of any descriptive word that comes out. And then at the end, you know, I'll go back. And if there's like, oh, there's 17 indiscriminate white guys sitting around a table, how do I differentiate them in this one scene? Or how do I, you know, this person sounds too similar to this person. How do I shake that up? And then it's like you said, you just got it. Yeah. It's, you know, the voice is one thing, but the acting is important, and you have to inhabit and be able to switch back and forth. If you're having a dialogue with two different characters, you've got to go back and forth between them for each line.
Have you had to do any ethnic voices?
I have.
Is that uncomfortable nowadays, or is there a way around it?
Now, I've been doing audiobooks for 10 years, and nowadays it's more uncomfortable than it was in the early days. When you're doing, I've done some older books, like pulp short stories from the 30s. And there was one that I did, I think it was a Manly Wade Wellman story. It was like a, you know, the 30s adventurer, and he had a Chinese butler, as most adventurers did in 1930 stories. And all of the butler's dialogue in the book was written in yellowface.
Oh.
So I had to do it that way because it's in the book that way.
Right.
So that's a little awkward.
It'd be more awkward if you read it in that, if you read it the way it was written, but didn't put the affectation on the voice.
Right. Or just make it, yes, professor.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, do you find it harder or easier to do like a nonfiction historical book as opposed to like the Forgotten Realms stuff that you did so much of?
I did do a few D&D books. It's a different thing. The stuff for nonfiction, it's mostly making sure you have your pronunciations ahead, all straightened out ahead of time, because you're not doing voices. Like if I'm doing a nonfiction book and there's like quotes from people, I don't like make the quotes different. I did when I started, and it sounded really stupid. Like I did a book about the, I think one of the San Francisco Giants World Series teams. And this was when I was first starting. And so I like, oh, manager Bruce Bochy. I can do a Bruce Bochy impression. And so I did. And then it's like, oh, wait a minute. This is, and then it was a terrible, it's a disaster. So now I have like a quote voice and a narration voice, but it's mostly about pronunciations and, you know, sounding like, you know what you're talking about. A book I did recently was, I think, a history of the Teutonic Knights. I've never heard of the Teutonic Knights. Let me read this book and become familiar. It's like, no, I have a doctorate in the history of the Teutonic Knights, and this is the book I read to learn. So it's like every obscure Polish, Lithuanian city, castle name, so many names that I couldn't even find stuff for. So that was the trick there. And then I did like a philosophy. It was like somebody's analysis of Immanuel Kant. And I didn't know what I was talking about, like just like paragraphs of just sentences about stuff. And it's just like, I don't know what this means. I'm just saying words. I hope you understand, but I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, at that point, I assume it's up to the author and his construction of what you're reading would be where it comes in. You're just the conduit, I guess.
Yeah, obviously good books make good audiobooks. I mean, it all starts with the writing. And Audible has, okay, so when you rate an audiobook on Audible, there's three ratings. There's an overall rating you can give, a story rating, and a performance rating. And I've done some lousy books. I'm not going to say what they are, but I've done some lousy books. But as long as, I don't slack off on them. I still, do my best. You know, my job is to get that performance rating higher than the story rating, whether those are 2.5 stars and 2 stars versus 4.9 stars and 4.8 stars.
Right.
If the performance is better than the story, wherever those numbers are, I've done my job.
It would be the exact opposite if you were listening to Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. The story is great, but boy, that was one of the worst performances I've ever listened to. And I listened to the whole thing.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it's sad because it was such a fascinating novelization of a movie that I really liked. You know, Tarantino wrote the novelization of it, added so much more depth to the characters and told different stories that you don't get to see in the film. But it was narrated by Jennifer Jason Leigh, who is a fantastic actress, but just didn't have didn't tell the story well. I thought it was very distracting.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like there've been a couple of books that I've done where, I crapped the bed. Like, oh, wow, that was terrible. Not many. Don't get me wrong. I can count on one hand, but and also it's what I do. What I like about audiobooks is it's all on me. It's like, it's all on me. I play all the characters. I don't have a director. If I screw up, I ruin the book. And if I don't, I get the kudos for it. I still, my favorite bad review. I read them because why not? Right. I like reading about myself. My favorite bad review is something. What was it? I hated this performance so much. In the future, I will avoid Troxel like he was poison.
That's awful.
All right. Well, at least you're creative about it.
I'll avoid Troxel like he's poison. I'm going to go seek out your audiobooks. How about that?
Okay. I've done a lot of.
Recommend any?
Yeah. My favorite, my all time favorite that I've done is a book called Bull Mountain. And its sequels, Like Lions and Hard Cash Valley. It's written by a guy named Brian Panowich, who lives out in Augusta. Southern hillbilly noir, I believe is the term for the genre that they're in. Bull Mountain is one of the few books of mine that I've listened to multiple times because the story is so good. Its point was like, it's one of those where it's like, I forget it's me doing it, if that makes any sense. But that's probably my all-time favorite. Panowich actually sought me out to be his narrator. He said, if I ever get published, Troxel's gonna, because he heard me do a Daniel Woodrell book, which was one of my first ones. And he said, he's got the right voice. And then he found out I was in Georgia like he was. And so I was like, hey, so I'm his guy. Right. In fact, he actually texted me when Hawkeye came out. And he said, if I ever get my dream job of writing a Marvel comic, I'm putting Gary in there. I don't care what the title is. Gary is going to be a character in my comic. That's great. Thank you. Thank you, Brian.
Well, I just saw that you're on a ton of books on Audible.
Yeah, 170 of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, Bull Mountain's my favorite, and the sequels are my favorite. But I've done like some of the nonfiction, nonfiction. Like I've done Apollo 8 is a really good one. There's quite a few. I've been lucky enough to do some really good books.
How long does it take your average novel to narrate?
They say you should get an hour of finished audio for every 2 hours you're in the studio. I'm a little faster than that for something like nonfiction. If it's still like conversationally written nonfiction, I can zip through like, you know, an hour of recorded audio in like an hour, 20 hour, 30 minutes. If it's something I'm really taking my time on, like a really good fiction book where I'm jumping between characters and I want to make sure everything's right and everything's perfect, then I can get a little slower. But usually, you know, a 10 hour audiobook, which is probably an average novel length, maybe somewhere around 9-10 hours, about 20 hours in the studio.
And is it commonplace for you to like, let's say you're starting a book and you get into the book maybe a couple of hours and then realize that the pace or the you've gotten the characters more locked in? Is it possible to go back and then start re-recording because you changed the pace or the character styling?
You can certainly do that. It just makes the process longer. I only did that once. There was I cannot remember the name of this book to save my life because I'm old and my brain doesn't work, but it was a book. It took place as three brothers in Memphis. It was a fiction book. And one of them just got out of prison, I believe. And I had 2 days in the studio and I just wasn't getting it. I wasn't happy with what I was doing, and I'd read the book and I figured, you know, I knew the characters, and I was like, I don't know why this one is giving me trouble. And so we ended up getting a call to the author, and I talked to the author for about 30 minutes and just like, okay, it just solidified a lot of things in my head. And I did go back and start that one again from scratch. But usually that's where preparation is so important. That's why I do so much prep ahead of time, because you don't want to get in that situation where you're halfway through and you go, oh, I should have done this.
Yeah.
I think it was the sequel to Bull Mountain. I think it was Like Lions. We were, I think chapter 8 or chapter 9 or something like that. And a character had just shown up in that chapter, and we had done it. We'd gotten halfway through that chapter and, Listen Up Audiobooks, the studio now known as Lantern Audio at the time, Keith David just happened to have walked in to have done a book. And so we saw Keith David walking by, and I was like, oh, this character would be great as Keith David. And so we went back and started again that chapter, and we just did him as Keith David. And it's like, oh, that was just weird. Just one of those things where like, you know what? That would be a great choice for this guy.
I love that guy. He's such a great voice.
And yes.
Any film he's in, he's the iconic character from that film pretty much.
Yep. Yep. He makes everything he's in better.
They Live, he made that better, mm-hmm. even though that is pretty cool on its own. But that is his character being the skeptic and fighting with Roddy Piper. And of course, Platoon.
Yeah. The
most memorable line that I'm not going to quote right now.
Even his small appearance in Requiem for a Dream, a movie I will not watch twice because it's so awful. I mean, not bad, but so harrowing to watch. He had one of the better.
What does he say? Because I know it's pretty, but I didn't take it out for air. Something like that.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, where can I get one of those Ronin swords?
Well, you have to be invited to the underground auction.
Okay.
That thing was awesome. The sword is longer than the hilt it comes out of.
I believe the sword may have been CGI'd in.
Yeah.
I know the Triceratops skull was actually there. That was an on-set thing. And I was like, oh, okay. That whole cellar was just a set. It was weird. But it was like, so even Simon Callow, who's been in everything, and like, oh my, everything, it's all just so real. It's all just so real.
What am I seeing? I've seen him in a million things, haven't I?
He's basically been every Charles Dickens in every British production. He was also, and I didn't ask him about this. He was also the villain in Ace Ventura 2.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was.
When Nature Calls.
Was he in Amadeus? He is in Amadeus. I thought so.
Okay.
He's very young in it, but he's in it.
Yeah. He was very nice. He was very, very, very British. So nice.
That's my bit. Where can people find more about you? And do you have a website, social
media? I'm on all the socials. I'm usually Troxbirds. And that was there's no story behind that. It's a stupid, boring story. But I'm on Twitter and Instagram as Troxbirds. I'm on the Facebooks, I'm all that good stuff. And you can also go to sketchworkscomedy.com and find links to our YouTube channel. We do a new news break every Tuesday. So we actually started that before COVID, but it's like, hey, so we got it's a weekend update thing we make fun of.
Well, we'll link to everything in the podcast. So okay. We'll put it in the YouTube podcast, and it'll also be in the RSS in the description and the feed. So that'll be awesome. Great. Thanks for coming on, man. And
sure.
You know, much more luck and success in the future. And we'd love to have you back next year, early next year, or whenever you want to come back.
Dude. Let us know when you can talk about the project that you can't talk about.
Okay. Yeah. I'll let you know. Yeah. If you want to have me on after Cobra Kai drops, I'll hop on whenever.
I'd love to have you back. Yeah. This was fun.
I'm easy. It'd be great. I'm easy. I'm easy and I'm cheap.
Brian, thank you very much. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
We'll talk to you in 2022.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.